Okay, let's come to order and welcome everyone to the first virtual meeting of the Clallam PUD for 2021. Let's hope it's going to be a better year. Our first item is approval of the consent agenda. There are 7 items on there which were sent out previously, so if there's any questions or discussion, we'll do those now.
Yeah, Will, on the minutes of the meeting, the December meeting, there's at least one correction, maybe two, but when we voted on the strategic plan, I thought Rick abstained, but maybe he did vote in the end. What's the case there? What?
He signed the resolution, so I'm assuming that he approved it.
He signed the resolution?
Yes.
Okay. I thought in a meeting he abstained, but it wasn't clear. It was kind of hard to hear the actual voting taking place. So, okay. But if he signed the resolution, I guess that means he voted for it. On the discussion about the strategic plan, the vote isn't recorded in the sense that I objected or didn't approve, and I think the minutes need to reflect that that I voted nay.
Okay. T, you want to make that change, and then we can go from there. We can either approve this or defer it till later when T has a chance to make a revision.
I can make the revision now and screen share it, or
okay, well, why don't we do that? We can go ahead and approve these and with that proviso that to make that change.
Okay.
That's fine. We'll
for the signed copy. Okay, other comments, questions? Do we have a motion?
Yeah, I'm going to make a motion to the consent agenda items. I don't have the list on this agenda I'm looking at, though, so the 5 that you mentioned.
I second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded for approval of the consent agenda for January the 11th, 2021. All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
I'm getting some feedback here. I don't know what the story is on that. Okay, agenda revisions. Do we have any, Doug?
Yeah, I've got one that I need to read to you here. When you get to the resolution 2189 on 21, we changed on establishing the Roth ICMA RC Deferred Compensation Plan. Jamie will go over this, but we deleted the one sentence that said that all prior resolutions pertaining to the plan are rescinded. And the reason we did that, because since we're amending the plan, we do not want to rescind prior resolutions, as it would effectively close out all the deferred components and only leave the Roth option for our employees. So that one sentence will be our, and T already has taken that out of the documents that you have, but the one that was sent out originally had that in there. So when Jamie gets to it, she'll also mention that we've taken out that sentence.
Okay, good. So we'll flag that when that item comes up.
Right.
Anything else?
No, that's all. Thanks.
Anything from the commission as far as agenda?
None for me.
Okay, thank you. All right, well, we get to comments from the public. Sean, do we have comments? You're going to coordinate this.
Yeah, nothing through chat right now, Will, but if anybody from the public wants to make a comment, go ahead and give me your first name now, and I'll put you on a list.
Yeah,
and
Richard,
for those calling in, it's *6 to unmute. I thought I heard somebody.
I think that was Richard.
Okay.
All right, go ahead, Richard.
On the business agenda, I see item D, association dues. Amongst the association dues, considered there, would Northwest River Partners be involved?
Yeah, when we get to that item, we can talk about that, but I believe they are on the list.
Okay. Well, I'd like to submit a comment, if I might.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I would object to Northwest River Partners being a group that we would join just based upon the controversies they're involved in. And in searching the Internet and watching that association over the past year, they've supported studies that are very controversial and are challenged and perhaps flawed. Well, they're busy pointing their fingers at the salmon survival issues being anything but dams. And then whenever somebody starts talking about breaching dams, then they support those dams, even though there are great flaws in those that support that. So I would object to supporting Northwest River Partners, please. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Other comments?
Didn't hear any others, Will.
Okay, good. Well, moving on to business items, our first item is election of board members. This is for president, vice president, and secretary of the board. The way we've done this in the past is that take nominations and then vote. So are there nominations for chairman?
I'd like to nominate Will Purser.
Okay, thank you. I guess we can vote on these as we go. So let's vote on that one, then we can move on to vice chair. How's that? All those in favor of Will Purser?
I think we need some discussion here, Will.
Okay, good. Go ahead.
There's a phone ringing in the background that I'm not going to answer, but it'll go away in a minute. It's a robocall, I'm sure. As I've asked around different commissioners and different PUDs how this works, it seems to me, Will, that the normal procedure is that the vice chairman of the board would become the president after, you know, in this case, you know, at this point we're at now. Is that a norm, or do we just vote fresh each time and let the chips fall wherever they may?
Well, I think historically we voted each time, and, you know, there's a variation across PUDs about how they do this. Some of them have permanent chairmen or keep their positions permanently for as long as their term lasts. So I'm not sure if we need to, you know, copy things after other utilities.
Okay, so let me ask this as a procedural question. I take it we can't nominate ourselves.
Well, yeah, I think that would not be proof.
It would be okay to nominate themselves if they got a second.
Yeah, you're right. You're right, Rick. So are we ready to vote on that one?
I am.
Okay. Well, all those in favor of Will Purser continuing as chairman of the commission, vote aye.
Aye.
Aye. Jim?
Aye.
Aye. Okay.
Okay, that's, I think it says president. We need to...
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm on so many of these things, I forget my titles. Anyway, okay. All right, we'll say president then. Well, I'd like to nominate Rick as our vice president of the commission.
I second that.
All right. It's been moved and seconded to appoint Rick or to elect Rick as our vice chairman of our commission. All those in favor? Aye. All opposed?
Aye.
Okay. Now, by default, that would leave Jim as our secretary. I don't think we need a nomination for that.
no, I don't think so.
Okay, good. All right, good. So that concludes that election of board officers. Our next item is resolution 2188-21, establishing staff titles and salary ranges. Jamie, are you going to do that one?
Yes, I am, if I can hit unmute and all of the proper buttons. So we are bringing forth resolution 2188-21. I have it right here in front of me. Establishing staff titles and salary ranges. And that would be rescinding resolution 2181-20. And in this updated staff titles and salary ranges, we have a couple changes. We have renamed the financial analyst position to a financial analyst one and regraded that position. Then added a financial analyst two that has been added to range 22. And this was just to better align the actual duties of the position and create some succession planning with that position. And then we are also within the resolution recommending a 3.5% increase to the market target of our salary ranges. So that is just the midpoint there that you can see in the attachments. About a year ago, we had Greg McNutt here from Milliman, and he gave the presentation to the board about his total compensation study he did for the district. And his recommendation made was to increase our pay structures on an annual basis. And the district went several years where we did not do that. So this is just to better align us with Milliman's recommendations. So that is why you're seeing that 3.5% increase on that market target or that midpoint.
Now, this is 3.5% to the range, not to the individual salaries.
Correct. So
yeah.
This has our staff employees are paid on performance base. So this is just an adjustment to the ranges. It does not mean that our employees will receive that increase. That'll vary based on their performance. And then lastly, the third point that is added to the resolution is that we've also recommended increasing the spread of our salary ranges. So our ranges have been established with an 80 to 120% range around our market, which is that midpoint. And this year we would like to establish an 80 to 130% spread around that midpoint. And where that has generated is we spent some time this last year researching some comparable utilities for our staff positions and noticed that they had a larger area there between their ranges, those minimums and maximums. And to be competitive with them, we felt this change would be beneficial. In turn, it can help us attract and retain our employees that we have, because we have employees with such long tenure here. So we are just asking the board to adopt Resolution 2188-21 and rescind Resolution 2181-20. Any questions?
Yeah, Jamie, I have one. You said you other PUDs are expanding the range. But you only expanded it up. Why wouldn't it be go both ways?
Well, with the 80%, it allows us to bring in, which is actually probably a little bit lower than some of our comparable utilities. So we already, you know, have the opportunity to evaluate somebody's skills, experience, and bring them in where we see aligned with our staff salary program. The 130, you know, we have our neighboring Jefferson PUD that actually caught some attention to some of our, you know, really established employees this year with their salary ranges. So I don't believe that we are up to what they have proposed there, but we are close to allow us to be more competitive. That was probably our biggest eye-opener this year. That's right next door. They are a growing utility. They have a lot of positions that will be attractive to our employees, and it's really not that far of a relocation here at the district. Other things with having the 30% up on top of that 130. We're seeing housing prices, you know, grow here, and to attract, you know, skilled workforce for our staff positions has been that of a challenge. We have some positions that we don't fill in a timely manner. It could take us months on months to bring in a, say, like an engineer, a degree engineer. Sometimes even some of our lower positions in our engineering department, we are having a difficult time to find the talent that we need. Accountants, you know, we're going to see a turnover here in our upper management over the next 5 years, and to get those candidates here, we felt like we needed to have that opportunity, you know, that they can see it visually, that there is potential, you know, with longevity here, that they could have a salary that they may be able to obtain depending on performance.
And Jamie, when people move from one position to a higher paid position, do they normally start out at the lower end of the range? Is that the philosophy?
That is. So our staff salary program, that midpoint or market target, depending on the skills that they have to obtain or maybe some degrees or additional education, it can be anywhere from 3 to 5 years before an employee actually reaches that market target per that policy. So we are bringing them in at the lower end of those ranges. You know, it takes a long, long time and outstanding performance for someone to ever, you know, reach that top of that range. And we're talking 15, 20 years in a position.
Okay, other questions, comments? I am backlit, so I'm going to go over here and close the blind.
The lighting is not good.
Jamie, thanks for the explanation. And I guess this isn't just a general comment, is that, you know, we've one drill after another, we're doing about whether it's salaries or whatever it is, we're talking about increasing the cost of the PUD. And of course, this is a concern to the ratepayers and what we spend money on and what we get for it and so forth. And while I appreciate the competitiveness issues and so forth, and I understand the analysis, I think we really have to be as vigilant as we can so that we just simply are not just being the inflationary factor here in Clallam mm-hmm. County. We're a big driver here in terms of what people spend their money on. So I just ask that the staff and we commissioners really pay attention to this.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. Other comments? Okay. Do I have a motion for this resolution?
I move that we accept 2188-21.
Okay, I'll second the motion of 218-21 establishing the staff titles and salary ranges and rescinding resolution 2181-20.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Make sure I'm not muted here. It's been moved and seconded to approve resolution 2188-21 establishing staff titles and salary ranges and rescinding resolution 2181-20. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, Jamie. Our next item is resolution 2189-21 establishing the Roth ICMA Deferred Compensation Plan. Jamie, I think you've got that one as well.
Yeah, I don't see you guys for a year, and then you get me twice on this. So
you get overtime.
That's okay. So, yes, we are asking that you guys adopt Resolution 2188-21, Resolution 2189-21, adding the Roth component to our ICMA-RC Deferred Compensation Plan. Adding this component to the ICMA Deferred Compensation Plan is something employees have been inquiring on. This will just mirror the setup that we have with MassMutual, our other deferred compensation plan, and is no cost to the district. It will provide another opportunity for our employees to save for retirement, which, as we all get closer, gets very important. So as Doug mentioned, the revision to the resolution would be removing that sentence that reads all prior resolutions pertaining to the plan are rescinded, so that we're not only having the Roth component, but we are just asking the board to pass resolution 2189-21, adding that Roth contribution and Roth rollover contribution to our ICMA RC plan.
Now, as I understand it, this will be separate from 457s or whatever people have. And so they will have to pay attention to this as a separate account. Is that right?
That is correct, how it's set up there with either MassMutual or ICMA in this circumstance.
And it is self-directed?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Jamie, I think you said there was no cost to the PUD?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the PUD is not contributing to this. This is all employee contributions that go in. So they elect if they want to do this. The district is not putting into the ICMA Roth component.
Thank you.
Now, a lot of utilities are contributing, I believe. Is that true or not?
Yeah, I don't know if they specifically do that to a Roth, but we see a lot of utilities that do offer the deferred compensation contribution, kind of, an employer one.
Some kind of matching is what they do, yeah. Okay.
Yes, that is correct.
All right, do I have a motion on this one, or are there more questions?
I move that we accept resolution 2189-21.
I'll second the motion for adopting resolution 2189-21, establishing the Roth ICMA-RC deferred compensation plan.
All right, it's been moved and seconded that for approval of resolution 2189-21, establishing a Roth ICMA deferred compensation plan for the utility. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, good. Thank you. Thanks, Jamie. I don't think you have another one, so take the rest of the day off.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, our next item is association dues.
No.
Doug, you're going to
help?
Yeah, let me go ahead and do that. Maybe, Sean, if you can let me share this, I'll see if I can share it okay.
Yeah, you should be able to share, Doug.
Okay, let me try that and see if it works here. Well, do you see anything yet?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah, you're on there, Doug.
Okay. Anyway, this is a list of the dues that we pay for different organizations. Throughout the last, oh, I guess we've got almost 10 years on here or more. And it shows some of the new ones that have requested to be also included. The ones in yellow, can you see those okay? Those are the ones we actually got an invoice or a letter from requesting that we sign up for this year. Wapuda, EDC, River Partners, and then River Partners had another request there. So those are real invoices. The other ones are just kind of estimates of what we paid in the past, and we expect those to be coming in. Now, I might mention that historically, it was pretty much just an administration function, admin. We signed up for the organizations that we participate in, and we knew we participated in. Only in the last year or two have I pointed out, I think three or four, because I believe there was some questions with some of the commissioners, so I pointed them out. This year, I've got all of them listed, so I'll open it for discussions for the commissioners. If you had questions about any of them, if you, however you want to approve these or not approve these, I'll leave it up to commissioners to decide and to to discuss.
Well, I guess my first question would be on the EDC. That's quite a jump from what we've done in the past. And also, back some years ago, we concluded that we had to get some tangible product from the EDC for us to be legally able to contribute. So is there a story behind that?
I think the story is EDC is doing more than they've done historically anyway, in our opinion. Now the question is, I know EDC sends us a list of the scope and the things that they've done and completed, and honestly, I'm not sure how much we actually go to EDC to look for these things, to find them, to use them in our everyday work. They do provide some things, demographics and things like that we've used in the past. So Colleen came on board some time back, went over a lot of this with all of you. So she kind of made her discussion then.
But I thought that in the past it had to be an identifiable work product delivered to the EDC, which would benefit the PUD. And I don't think just a listing of their activities would quite satisfy that. I don't know. Maybe that's a discussion for our lawyer.
I think the scope of work they gave had some benefit, or would have some benefit for us. And so there was some value there. But whether we use it or how often we use it, I haven't really investigated that. Maybe we should do that.
Well, I'm just concerned about keeping our skirts clean as legally. You know, we've been in the past, economic development is not – it's of course, we influence economic development, but contributing directly it has to be – nuanced, I suppose we should say. What were we paying in the past? $20,000 is quite an uptick, isn't it?
Yeah, well, we had paid $5,000 in the 2016-2015 time frame. Last year, Colleen came in and we discussed it, and we paid $10,000. I think she was still asking for $20,000 last year, and we decided to look into it this year and give her a chance. And so she paid, we paid $10,000 last year, or 2020. And this year her letter indicated that she would like $20,000 again. And she did come in and give a presentation. So I think that's what she was basing it on.
Yeah, and she's doing a good job, you know, as far as economic development and all that. But we just need to make sure that we are not, going to be challenged with this in the future.
Right.
Well,
anyway.
Part of her product, for instance, during the COVID thing, she was very instrumental here in the county and to the benefit of the PUD directly in terms of making sure with the state and other granting agencies that money was coming into the county that would benefit either indirectly or directly our PUD ratepayers. And so, she bent over backwards, spent a lot of time working on this for the benefit of the PUD. So I'm not sure how you can say, well, that's not real, that's not a product or something, but it certainly was important. And I think, she gave a presentation and laid out what she was doing here a month or two ago, and it was pretty impressive. And I, if we didn't accept it at that time, then we should have. I mean, in other words, what she was saying.
Okay. Sean might be able to give a little bit more. He's worked with EDC a few times, and regarding this, when we were looking for the CARES money, I know Sean worked with EDC on that. Sean, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, like one thing.
Well, I can share my screen if you guys want, and I can show you what the specific deliverables are from Colleen has said.
Sean, let me interrupt you there a minute. Yeah, that's great, and I think we all agree that the EDC and Colleen is doing a great job. But I'm concerned about the auditor. we need to make sure there's a line of sight benefit to the PUD, and we need to document that in some fashion. And I'm not opposed to participating in EDC by any means, but we just have to do it prudently, I think. Anyway, go ahead, Sean.
Well, I was just going to say I have a copy of what she sent the district as far as the deliverables that she's promising, and I can share that with you if you would all like to see it.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Doug, I'm going to stop your share here real quick.
Okay.
So this is the document that she sent us, and it just says these are the five things here, what she's going to do. The EDC and PUD have negotiated the required performance measures that will be used by the EDC and PUD to assess the EDC performance. She references a section B here in the table. And so if you go down to section B, these are the things that she's going to do: recruitment and marketing activity, business retention expansion activities, business assistance, readiness and capacity building. So I mean, I understand your concern, Will, and if you like, I'm happy to run this by our attorney and see if we can get his opinion.
Historically, this has been an issue, and I think, and in the past, we've had a well-defined deliverable to the PUD, and that seems to pass muster, so I just don't want to make sure we're doing that. These are all good activities, but we need to see something that is value to the PUD directly, and there's a line of sight benefit, so... I don't know. I think I would run this by our attorney and see what he had to say.
This is Rick. I too am concerned with the jump from 10,000 to 20,000. That seems a significant increase.
It's $10,000 less than they asked for the first year and so forth. I guess I would like to point out that Are you guys still there? I lost my screen here. Many of these, Sean, can you put the spreadsheet back up with the other organizations? I guess that same question, Will, goes to all these organizations. I mean, even the smallest ones, the Fort Angeles Business Association, right on up to, the rest. I mean, that's a fundamental question: is there a benefit to the PUD for any of this stuff? And so, I don't know how if you're going to run all this list by the lawyers or you're just looking at this one.
Okay, I get your point. Well. Let's see. Rick, you're concerned about the dollar amount. Do you have an alternate you would propose? Or?
Well, I'm like you. I fail to see the direct link.
Yeah. And, we...
Okay. So what about Port Angeles Chamber of Commerce, the Forks Chamber of Commerce, the North Peninsula Building Association? Come on. What's the link there?
Well, I think the difference is that it's spelled out, the RCWs, what the function of PUD is, and it does not include economic development. These other organizations are just civic organizations that are not, I'm sure that the criteria is a bit different.
But still, we're paying for something, right? That's what you want, line of sight.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's go ahead and vote on it, and let's see how it goes. Did you have more on this, Sean, or Doug?
Yeah, I got some questions or concerns. You've got Northwest River Partners on here, and, I disagree with them being on this list, and I think we need to just strike them off for the following reasons. They have put out several papers over the last year that have been misleading to the PUDs and to the general public. For instance, their report on EPA's TMDL report, the water temperature report in the lower Snake, or the Snake River, was poorly developed, and they cherry-picked certain information out of the report and made a case about water temperatures in the Lower Snake that was invalid. And I made this presentation to Laputa, and I had to write a correction to it, and then Kurt Miller responded back, and I wrote a second correction. And that's an example. He also was citing a scientific, quote, piece of science that came out about 3 or 4 months ago on ocean conditions, and about how ocean conditions were the real problem behind salmon declines, and it really wasn't the river itself is the big problem. And that was debunked by a lot of people, including the BPA's Fish Passage Center, who basically said it was flawed, and it wasn't credible, and so forth like this. And yet Northwest River Partners still promotes this. And so I don't, talk about lack of value. I mean, this is not only a product that we shouldn't be using, but we're going to spend money for something that's misleading. So I think they should be off this list if we're going to vote on the whole list.
Well, there are a number of the H's that impact salmon: harvest, ocean condition, hatcheries, and hydro. And the one that has the least verifiable is harvest and ocean conditions. So I'm not sure that challenging that is going to be valid.
Well, the people that know this stuff did, and they basically said it. That report that guy put out from Katuma Research or whatever it is isn't credible in this debate. But, because it makes it sound like the dams aren't a problem, then, people like it. Or, Northwest River Partners likes it. I think most people see through that stuff. So, anyway, I can give you other examples.
All right. You have a problem with Northwest River Partners. Are there others on this list that you have a problem with?
No, and I appreciate that Waputa must have relooked their dues to us for 2021, because I made the point at a previous meeting that I didn't understand why our dues were going up when everybody else's was going down. But it looks like, I don't know, Sean, did they really go down, or is it just I'm not reading something here right?
No, thank you for giving us that information at the last meeting, because I contacted Waputa directly, and they did have an error in our calculation. So, yes, the number that you see there, the 92,182, is correct after they recalculated the dues.
Well, errors on dues is not permissible. So.
But we like this error, Will.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's right. Well, isn't their dues based on size and customer count and a number of different factors?
It's actually based on quite a few things: number of meters, customer count, revenue. It's based on several different factors, but I can't remember which one of the factors they had incorrect, but one of them was incorrect. I think it was our number of meters, but we corrected it, and this is the new number.
Okay, good.
I don't have any other concerns.
I move that we accept this list, less the EDC.
All right, do we want to do we have a second? We don't have a second. Do we want to talk about that? We can probably pare that number down a bit, make it more palatable. We can incrementally increase the 10,000, say, to 15 or so, and then go from there. I'm just concerned about the optics of not supporting EDC in total.
Well, yeah, I agree with, I think what you said, Will, is you're basically saying that we should keep it on there.
Well, okay. Well, let's talk about that maybe at a reduced amount. Is there any energy around that?
So what if it was 15,000?
Too much.
Well, what about 12,000? We're in a bidding war here.
I'd go with 10.
Okay. All right. Well.
So how are we going to do this? Because I've disagreed to having Northwest River Partners. They got two items on here, and I think a digital media program, basically, that they will end up just proliferating misleading information to younger people, targeted at younger people that may not have any background in this, is troubling. So I move that we take that one off. If you're going to reduce CDC, then, or EDC, I don't know if we're trying to do these together or as one list or how we're doing this.
Well, we can do it by one list, but it sounds like since we have some problems with individual items, the ones that we do have problems with, we can vote on those separately. So what I have then is, Rick, do you want to amend your motion on EDC to 10,000?
Yes, sir.
Okay, good. So it's been moved. Do you have a second for 10,000, Jim?
Yeah, I'll second it with concerns, though.
Well, you know, we can incrementally take it up to, go from there. All right, so it's been moved and seconded that we support the Economic Development Council of Clallam County at a annual dues of $10,000. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And the next item is River Partners. Do we have a motion to participate in River Partners?
Yeah, I move that we strike them both line items off the association dues.
Is there a second or not a second? It doesn't appear like we have a second. Do we have a motion to include River Partners?
I move that we include River Partners in the River Partners Digital Media.
Okay, I'll second that. So it's been moved and seconded that we approve River Partners in the list of organizations in which we participate. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
Nay, I oppose. It's a waste of money.
Okay. All right, what about the balance of the list? Do we have a motion to approve the rest of this?
I move that we accept the rest of the list.
I'll second the motion.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to accept the organization dues for all of those items listed, excluding EDC, which has been revised, and the River Partners, which has been previously approved. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, we kind of danced through that one.
Now, Will, let me just add something on that. That list, as was pointed out, only those few items have we received an actual invoice on or for the dues. So some of the others might be a little more, a little less, and I'm assuming that that's okay with all the commissioners within a, say, 10% or ballpark or something like that.
10% is what I was thinking, Doug.
Yeah, that's fine. So.
That's fine with me.
Okay.
Will, did you ask for a second vote on this?
I thought I did.
A minute ago, you said in fact. Well, I voted nay for second.
The
balance of the list. Okay, got it.
Yeah, balance.
Yeah, I got that. Yes, I agree with that.
Okay. And, I think just to cover ourselves and keep this from coming up again is we need to go to our attorney and make sure get an auditor's opinion on what kind of participation we can do in EDC. So, and I'm just basing
well,
that
on.
Go ahead.
Bill, I would like the second review of Northwest River Partners.
Well, okay. You can add that to our question. Okay. All right. Well, let's move on. All Our next item is committee memberships, and I have that one. Now, we're talking about participation in these organizations. Is that right, Doug?
Yes, that's right.
All right. I think since we just approved the dues, I think maybe it's kind of ostensibly that we are going to be members in this. So it's a matter of who serves on these and who represents the utility. There's a list went out, which was a draft committee organization memberships that I think everybody has seen. So is there a discussion on that?
I have a question on process. Was that list shown in the BOC package that was on the website that the public can see?
Doug, you want to answer that?
No, that wasn't. Let me unmute myself here. No, that wasn't. That was a list that was submitted. I had sent this list to or the 2020 list to all the commissioners probably 2 or 3 weeks ago and asked them to review it. Will was the only one that actually sent back a proposed list, and that's the list that was sent to was part of the package. It wasn't put in the public package because it was just a recommendation from Will.
Well, I guess I'd add to that you know, this is something that's up to the commission to who represents the utility. We're elected by the public. We'll take comments on that. That's fine. But, you know, I'm not sure that we need to have a second election as to who represents the utility in each organization.
No, I was just I think it's important for the public to know what organizations we belong to, who's representing what, and that kind of stuff. And you said you sent a draft list out a couple of weeks ago, Doug. And then list we're looking at is what Will gave you?
What was that, Jim? I sent the 2020 list out that I think T probably sent it out to all of you a few weeks ago, or maybe I did.
And I think part of that was, Doug, you were asking for comments,
right.
Recommendations on this, so we all had an opportunity to comment on it.
Yeah, I was fine with it.
Okay, and when it's approved,
it was.
And whatever you all approve now will be put on the website for the public to see, too.
Yeah, it'll be part of the minutes, I would think. So.
Right.
Well, I guess I would like to be listed on the Energy Committee at WAPUTA, at least. I'll give Rick a chance of being on the Board of Directors, but I still would like to be on the Energy Committee.
Okay, so let's go ahead and vote on this and see what comes out. Do I have a motion on this?
Did we accept the list as presented?
All right, do we have a second? Well, I'll second Rick's motion. It's been moved and seconded to approve the committee participants list organization for 2021. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
Nay.
Okay.
I have a Rick for you, since you're going to be on the Energy Committee. Can you please send me the read-aheads from the Energy Committee prior to each meeting when you get them? Rick, did you copy?
I heard you.
Yeah. I think Rick is the alternate to the Energy Committee. I've got.
Okay, can you do that, Will?
Yeah, and you know, the way this works, as you well know, you can certainly participate in WAPUTA and in the discussions and so on. It's just whether or not you have a vote on these different committees. So.
No, I understand. I can't vote based on what we just voted. You know, the list that I'm not a delegate in any way, shape, or form, but I'm still entitled to the information.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Okay, our next item is correspondence and communications. We've got WAPUTA letter, vaccination distribution for essential utility workers. Doug?
Always have to remember to unmute here. Yeah, I just wanted to point out to you, and I had sent you this in the package. This is the letter that George Kahn, who is the executive director of the Washington PUD Association, had sent to Governor Jay Inslee, basically regarding vaccination distribution for essential utility workers. And it's something that we've been talking as a group to George and the Waputa regarding making sure that essential workers can get the vaccination. We do have a problem with if we started having COVID break out in some of our crews and it's snowballing throughout the crews, that it could be a real problem for us and for our customers if they had to be quarantined at home. So George put together this letter in regards to for all PUDs, just asking him to the governor to prioritize the vaccination for the mission of essential workers. So we appreciate George doing that and just bring it to your attention. We have not really received anything back specifically for us. We're not, depending on different categories, we fall into different levels, different time frames. So we're hoping that depending on ages is how they're looking at it now and whether they're high risk individuals, whether they would be in January or February. We're hoping by that time we can get most employees vaccinated. But it will depend on the governor and the CDC. So that's one letter from George. Now I've got another one here from, or not a letter, but something that was published recently in the NWPPA newsletter in their December bulletin. And it's an article that talks about Clallam being recognized as a smart energy provider. And it's pretty short. Maybe I'll read it. PUD. Clallam County and Squim, Washington has earned Smart Energy Provider designation from American Public Power Association for demonstrating commitment to and proficiency in energy efficiency, distributed generation, and environmental initiatives that support a goal of providing low-cost, quality, safe, and reliable electric service. This SEP designation, which stands for Smart Energy Provider, lasts for 2 years and recognizes public power utilities for demonstrating leading practices in four key disciplines, smart energy program structure, energy efficiency, and distribution energy programs, environmental and sustainability initiatives, and the customer experience. So we joined 85 public utilities nationwide that hold the SEP designation. And as you think, there's like almost 2,000 public utilities in the United States. So this recognition, along with RP3 that we received also, which is, I think it was about 240 utilities in the whole United States received a reliable public power designation. We're quite proud of, and employees have done an excellent job of gaining those recognitions. And just wanted to point that out to the commissioners and the public that we are doing what at least our peers feel is very valuable work and very good work for our customers.
So you said that George Kahn had sent a letter to the governor's office on the behalf of Waputa discussing essential workers and the vaccinations and so on. And we have not received anything specific to RPUD. Did George get a response from the governor's office, or has he not?
Not that I know of. Maybe Nicole knows, but I'm not sure of any response directly. Nicole, do you know anything directly back?
No, it wasn't anything directly back. This was just at the request of those energy calls we've been having with Department of Commerce, where they had specifically asked for representation from the utility sector for this process. And so that's what George was responding to. And it will likely be discussed at the next Commerce call that we have.
The way it stands now, it's we've got essential workers, we've got age-related. Don't know how that's going to fall out as far as people that meet the age requirement and are essential, I guess. So anyway, okay, well, we'll just see how it plays out, I guess.
Doug, I'd like to congratulate you and the staff on the smart energy provider and the RP3. Good job.
All right, thank you. I do appreciate that.
Do we get a plaque or something we can display for that? That's worth noting.
Yeah, we've got the RP3, and which is in our boardroom, and we do have a SEP plaque too. So
great.
We'll be displaying those in the future here when public starts coming back in.
Yeah, good. And what about some kind of press release?
Nicole's, she's the one that helped get that one in NWPPA. And,
yeah, we did have that. The paper did pick that up, and both Matthias and I are planning on giving a little discussion about it in February, presenting it to the board about the process that went into both the RP3 application and the SET application.
Yeah.
I doubt that the public realizes how unique this is, or what a select group that puts our utility in, so we need to tout that, I would think, but just my opinion.
Yes, that's why we wanted to wait until we had Rick on board so all three of you could hear the presentation.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right, our next item is commissioner reports. Rick, you want to lead us off, or did you just eat a lot of turkey over the past 2 weeks?
Well, I've still been trying to get up to speed on all the documentation that's been given. Haven't been to any meetings. Just been working a lot with Doug trying to get up to speed.
Okay, good. That sounds great. Jim, do you have anything?
A couple things. We had a WAPAG meeting about 3 weeks ago, and I'll talk about that. First, a couple smaller items. I received correspondence from a ratepayer concerning BPA outages and, his concern that we're, basically continuing to have long-term, multi-hour power outages because of BPA transmission issues. And I think that, I asked Doug to provide a response and we'll do that. I also
Excuse me, John is going to give a presentation on the outages and what we're doing and discussions with BPA here in a few minutes after Commissioner's report. Thank you.
Okay, and then there was another letter that I saw came in about a week ago from another ratepayer concerning several issues, and Rick responded back. I'm not sure I agree, Rick, with your response, and I think that really should have come from Doug. You're making some assumptions there that I think he should have answered, but I you may have talked about that. The third one is I got a call from the Audubon Society, and I talked to them a few days ago, and I know the staff's well aware of the situation on Kerner Road with the power lines we have there and swans that are in a pond there striking these power lines, and it's been an ongoing issue for some time. And the little discussion that I had on last week with these folks indicates that in spite of all the work we've done to find deflectors on there and so forth like that, it's still a problem. It's going to be a continuing problem because the population of swans on that particular pond have increased about tenfold over the last 4 or 5 years. And during this last migration season where they're roosting in this particular pond, there's been eight strikes and 5 deaths. And we still got a few months to go. And in fact, one of the deaths, as I understood it, occurred after we put up additional deflectors. And so, I basically said, since I know the staff's working on this and I've talked to John and Doug about this and so forth, is that we do whatever we can to accommodate their effort, And I know they're going to try to raise money to actually bury those lines. And so we should expedite whatever we can on our part and see if we can take care of this. It's going to be an ongoing and very visible problem for us. So anyway, just report on that. And I know that what I'd recommend is that I know John and Doug and the staff are already working on this, but Doug, if you need some additional guidance or something from the commissioners, you know, let us know and we'll, you know, tell you what to do, I guess.
Okay, thank you.
So the WAPAG meeting that we had about 3 weeks ago for Christmas was did two things. One, we had briefings by three or four PUDs. We did our briefing. Tyler King did most of it, did a good job of pointing out what was going on here in Clallam County and so forth. And we heard from three others, and you know, we're all different, of course, and there's a lot of different issues among the PUDs. But there was, if I try to sum up and characterize some of the comments, is that of those four, there were a general concern about where things were headed in terms of BPA finances, in terms of the reliability issues, and how these contracts are going to be set up over the next, you know, the process of setting these things up for 2028, and whether different kinds of contracts, perhaps shorter-term contracts, contracts with it gives us an out, because there's a recognition of a lot of uncertainty around the energy markets and what BPA's prices are going to be and so forth. And so I think that, you know, people are paying attention to this and trying to think lean forward in terms of understanding different options that might be available to us, and just instead of just accepting the status quo of the last 20 years. The other part of the meeting was dealing with the BPA's 2022-23 rate case. And so what WAPAG put out was their analysis of BPA's initial proposal for power rates. And basically what BPA is proposing in their initial, the way this works is they're doing the initial, you know, now, and then the final decisions will be made in July of this year about, and then effects, the rates would go into effect in October of 2021 this year. And so basically they're saying that for the BP 22 rate case is that rates will remain flat for several years as BPA cuts expenses to ward off market and operational factors that create upward rate pressure. Okay, but they're also saying on the transmission side, there's going to be 11% increase in relative rates to current rates. And so that's going to be a concern. But I also respect it because, like I just mentioned, and you guys know it's, you know, John and the staff and everybody, we've had issues with BPA's transmission system out here for, well, you guys know well, you do too, the history of this thing. And so I'm not surprised that there's going to be a rate increase on the transmission side for those folks that say that. A couple points, though, about why BPA is predicting flat rates is that there, in spite of the fact that their tier one firm critical output based on high water marks from 1937 is actually going to be about 300 megawatts average annual than it was in last year, is, and this is primarily from spill on the dams, primarily on the Lower Snake dams. But in spite of there being 300 less, Bonneville is predicting that the secondary sales, which are keeping rates flat, are going to be at such a level as to maintain a good balance of cost versus revenue. What's a little scary, I guess, we should be concerned about is that the tier one rates or tier two rates, of course, have dropped significantly since FY13 down to a high of about 48 to a low of about $25 a megawatt hour in year before last in FY19. They spiked up last year primarily because of the very high rates that occurred during the July, August, September timeframe in Southern California due to high heat conditions, and there's some transmission issues that cause things to jump up. And they show that these, so that bumped the tier two rates up about $5 per megawatt hour. And they're basically showing, so it's over $30 a megawatt hour. And they're showing that, you know, similar numbers for the next 3 years. But still, those numbers are below the tier one rates. And so what BPA is banking on to keep our rates low is the secondary sales is a big part of that. Yes, cost control and so forth, but, you know, they pretty much bled that dry in terms of cost, things they can cut out. But anyway, the concern we should have, I don't know, Sean can add his view on this thing. I've asked him to take a look at this too, is that, you know, our future depends on what Bonneville, I wouldn't say our future, but a lot of our rate pressure depends on these secondary sales, the tier two sales, and currently they're below. They're predicted to trend down starting this year anyway. And again, they're based on higher, you know, an anomaly that may have happened in this past year. Let's see if I have anything else. No, that's about it. Sean, you're familiar with this presentation. You may have been in the meeting. Do you have anything else to add? Or
No, you covered the WAPEG meeting really good, Jim. I'll just note that the initial proposal of 0% power and 11.6% on the transmission, those are weighted average increases, so it's going to be completely different what each individual utility will experience. And the other thing, too, that they touched on was the demand rates are going to increase significantly for load-following utilities with the initial proposal. And the example that they gave was for a utility, they used December as the example, who had a 40 megawatt increase over the previous year, it'd be an additional $562,000 in demand charges. And over the rate case, our individual utilities look at about a 4% overall increase in demand charges if the initial proposal goes through. So no, other than that, Jimmy, good job on covering what they went over in the meeting. It'll be interesting to see how it finally ends up in July.
That on the demand charge, our ability with our smart meter program to do time of day metering, is that going to help when we play that out, that demand charge?
Yeah, I think John could jump in here too, but we're a couple years away from being able to pilot a time of use rate, Will.
Yeah, I knew that, but it will help, though.
Yeah, it will help.
Yeah, basically, Will, what it will allow us to do is to charge our cost of energy on a clock so that as BPA increases demand charges, we will also be able to have the opportunity to implement a charge associated with the demand and when we see it.
So,
John, you might mention that battery program that we're talking about in the future that we're setting aside for CETA. You might mention how that impacts it too.
Yes. Okay. So basically over the next 4 to 5 years, probably 5 years, we do see a time where the BPA demand escalations as well as battery decreases in cost will reach a point where it makes financial sense and financial sense alone to implement a distribution scale battery. And we're planning for that sometime 4, 5, 6 years from now, depending on the BPA rate cases, where we actually invest money that we're setting aside in our CETA fund for a distribution scale battery that will significantly mitigate the BPA demand increases. One thing, Sean touched on it, but over the last decade, the better part of the current contract, that our effective bill, as well as City of Port Angeles' effective bill, has escalated more than any other utility. And that is because of the demand charges and the fact that we have very little non-electrical heating sources. We don't have a gas distribution network, and the number of people who are actually burning wood is declining. So we've seen higher than average BPA rate increases going back to 2010.
They actually highlighted that, John, in the WAPEG meeting. One of the slides they had on there shows over the last four rate periods the cumulative increase for all the WAPEG utilities. And Port Angeles was number one, the 36% increase, and we were number three at 34%.
So that point about natural gas, we're one of the few utilities that does not have access to natural gas. It was, I think at one time there was going to be a pipeline up to on the peninsula, and that was opposed. So how unique are we? It sounds like we're pretty unique in not having natural gas.
I believe we're pretty unique in western Washington. I don't think Jefferson has natural gas.
No, probably not.
Well, John, I think that's great that you two are combining the battery potential utility scale batteries with trying to shave the demand charge. I really like using that CETA to help us on the demand.
Yeah.
So that's why I said in the last meeting we need to look beyond CETA because we're going to need more than that tiny little bit to meet our CETA requirements to really make a dent on demand charges. And this issue about being all electric out here brought up several times in the past. And yeah, and Will, this is why, and Rick, I say our strategic plan really needs to be looking forward to this, but it's forward thinking about all this stuff as it affects our ratepayers because we are so different and all the utilities are different, but we're in this pickle that Sean just described, and it really behooves us to, look hard at what BPA is doing.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll go ahead and report my activities. Our last commission meeting was on the 14th, and on the 16th, there was a virtual meeting of the Executive Board of Energy Northwest, starting off with the CEO's report. The big news there is, and this is not news to a lot of us, but the CEO is retiring. We got him to agree to stay through the next refueling outage because he was scheduled to leave in May, and we would have gone right into a refueling outage without a CEO or an interim CEO. So he agreed to stay on, which is commend him for that because that's a high-stress, high-activity period. We talked about the extension of the license for Columbia Generating Station and the need to get out and inform the public about the importance of that since it produces about 15% of the energy in the Northwest. Good news for CGS, the National Trade Group of Nuclear Plant Operators, we can't use that term, but they re-ranked Columbia Generating Station as a one performer, which is really good. We haven't been there for many years, so hopefully we can maintain that. All of our activities with small modular reactors, with TerraPower and X Energy and NuScale is getting a lot of support from the nuclear community. The Nuclear Energy Institute is telling us that we're kind of leading the charge for survival and continuation of nuclear energy as a part of the energy mix. And the fact that it is zero carbon, of course, is the main selling point. NuScale, which is, we've got a letter of understanding with NuScale to provide technical support, operator training, and so on. They have the most active small modular reactor technology now. They recently came out with upgrading the output per module of their design. This is based on producing hydrogen, which I think is kind of interesting. I kind of wonder about the distribution and utilization of hydrogen. There's other ways to do it. You could use it to manufacture ammonia and so on, but as a fuel source, I always think of the Hindenburg when you talk about hydrogen. The CEO, his chief nuclear officers report good results, good generating record, and so on. They did have two little outages, which were based on equipment reliability, but they were very short duration. On another front, the union negotiations with IBEW are in mitigation, so Sue should get in. Actually, it's a very cooperative negotiation, so we'll see how that goes. Overall, the plant, the nuclear plant, is over their target for generating power and under budget, so those are good news. We had a report on from a outside auditor. They specifically were auditing the preventive maintenance program, and good controls were identified and so on. They did have some minor comments, which is always good from an auditor to get those. Then we went into an executive session to talk about cybersecurity, and I can't go into that, but that's a hot button for everybody these days. So there's a lot of activities going on with cybersecurity. Then we had a report on the engineering services and development, which is a separate entity within Energy Northwest. They operate the Backwood Wind Farm, Nine Canyons Wind Farm, the Packwood Dam, and so on. And they're all doing very well as far as generation and availability. The Horn Rapids solar project is online. It does have a battery. It's a 1 hour, 4 megawatt battery. And that project came in under $400,000 under budget. And there was also a dedication of that facility, which was well covered by the press. I've talked about that 300-acre solar farm letter of intent that a developer has submitted to Energy Northwest, and Energy Northwest sent out a request for interest in that project. Actually, only three public utilities expressed an interest, but they wanted 100 to 175 megawatts, and the output of the project is only 75. That may drive interest, and there's an additional 1,600 acres there that may be available to expand that solar farm and to increase the output. We'll see how that goes. The other thing about ESD was that there's a Mission Support Alliance, which has all the work on the Hanford Reservation for remediation, and they are, it's the main player there is Bechtel, and they've signed a blanket agreement with Energy Northwest to provide services, lab services, and so on. In addition, Energy Northwest received a grant from the state of Washington for EV electric vehicle charging stations for six stations along Highway 12. Now, that grant is only $1.5 million, which will not cover that entire cost, but we've kind of taken the approach that we'll strategically place these around so that there is some return on that investment. BPA's report, Jim, this is kind of runs counter to what you said, but they are saying that their financial report exceeded target. They attributed that to higher secondary sales. And, of course, the
Will, that's actually pretty much what I said.
You're saying it was kind of a black swan from this past year, I believe, right?
This is what happened this past year.
Yeah, that's right.
August timeframe.
Yeah, and, of course, it's dependent on California and weather conditions there and so on. So it's going to go up and down, I'm sure. BP 22, the rate proposal will be out, is already out. The rate case will be final in July of 21 and effective in October of 21, which we're all aware of. Um, They also reported that the temperatures have been above average so far. There's been no cold spells that are forecast. I think back east there's a predicting a polar vortex, but hopefully it won't impact us out here. And water availability is running very high, historically high, and snowpack is still building. So that all looks very good. So anyway, that's all I had. If no other comments or questions, we move on to staff reports. And the first one is power outages from January 5th and 6th. And, John, I think you have that one.
Yes, well, I'm going to try to share my screen.
Excuse me, John, while you're doing that, let me just give you an update. Will, you had asked about whether George received the response on the vaccination. I just got a letter from our email from Liz Anderson down there, and it says, after seeking clarification regarding the vaccination distribution plan, it appears that the critical infrastructure workers are not included in the first phase of the plan and would be able to receive the vaccine in phase two. The timeline for the phases shows that it would likely be in May at the earliest for PUD critical infrastructure employees to have the access to the vaccine. And based on this, George is going back to the governor with another letter. So we'll be participating and helping him with that. But it doesn't look like we got a whole lot of response from the governor. Okay, I'm sorry, John. Go ahead.
We're pursuing other pathways to get our people vaccinated, I hope. So anyway,
right.
Go ahead, John. I'm sorry.
Right.
Oh, no problem. So basically last week on Tuesday, everyone is aware that we had a BPA, a lengthy BPA outage for Western Clallam County. It began about 1 p.m. on the 5th, and the outage was not restored until about 11 a.m. on the 6th, 22 hours affecting almost 5,500 customers. Also, during this outage, they made three restoration attempts where they tested the line, and as part of that practice, they had to take out additional customers, totaling almost 2,800 off of a Silverado and Lair's Corner substations, and that occurred about 8:30 on the 5th, a little after midnight on the 6th, and lastly, when the line was actually restored at 11 a.m. on the 6th. So, yeah, 5,500 customers plus another 2,800 customers for 5-minute, 10-minute brief outages during the outage event. Okay, the timeline, 13:14 initial outage, 13:25 PUD crews commenced patrolling the 25-mile section of BPA line, as well as BPA lines under the BPA outage, PUD lines under the BPA outage. So we patrol both from Silverado and from Sappho going towards the middle. About 20 minutes after the outage, the local operator obtained a distance relay reading that indicated the fault was near West Twin. When we got to West Twin at about 3:30 p.m., we did not see any trouble at that location. So we believe the distance relay was either off or was a temporary fault at that time. We got report that the BPA crew reached Squim about 3:55. About almost at 5 o'clock, one of our crews did locate down wire about 9.7 miles east of Sappho, and approximately 5:30, the BPA crew arrived at the damage location. They isolated lines, did grounds, commenced repairs, and about 8:20 attempted a restoration, but it was not successful. The breaker opened up again. During the storm, we had sustained winds, and by all appearances, additional trees came down in the interim, so after the patrols. About 9:50 p.m., they did locate the second point of tree contact. and after the repairs, attempted a restoration about 12:30 a.m. And once again, it failed because a third tree had contacted the line since the last patrol for the second problem. Okay, about 4:30 in the morning on the 6th, they did locate the third point of damage. It is about 15 miles east of Sappho, and a second BPA crew was dispatched. The first crew exceeded the 16-hour safe work limit. Between 4 and 7 a.m. on the 6th, PUD isolated substation equipment and opened up distribution breakers to conserve substation batteries. We don't want our batteries run out and not have enough energy to operate equipment for the restoration. At some point after daylight, BPA said they did perform a daylight airplane patrol of the line, and by 11:10 a.m., the second crew made final repairs and restored the transmission between Silverado and Sappho. Within 20 minutes, we restored all the West End distribution. Okay, this is an overview of our line. The blue line is the BPA line. It actually originates for the 115 for BPA at the PA substation. That's a BPA substation, and runs through Silverado SV substation, where we take a point of delivery, and continues out to the gray triangle, which is Sappho. The section of lines that experiences the problems during this event were three tree contacts or trees in the line or down phases, and that light blue segment. And that's a pretty remote location. You have to access it through logging roads. You're not going 50 mile an hour down the highway. You're going 15 or 20 mile an hour over dirt roads to reach points that you can actually patrol the line. You don't have a continuous road that runs parallel to the line. You're gaining access at multiple points along the transmission that you have to go up the logging roads, patrol a certain distance, and then come back down to the highway and gain access to the next logging road to the east or west. So it's not a fast process. Okay, so we have experienced an extraordinary number of BPA outages over the last 2 to 3 years, more than historically we have. The last time we talked to BPA at a high level about outages, Doug and myself talked to the BPA transmission service people, as well as the system operations and engineering, back in February of 2018. And we covered a wide variety of subjects. If you're interested, I guess I can kind of highlight the points, but I'll have to stop sharing and share another screen. See if I can do this. Okay, so back actually close to 3 years ago, it was, we met on this same issue with BPA, and we wanted to get an understanding of what it required for BPA to get out in our territory. We asked a number of questions. BPA responded, these are the minutes of the meeting, of how long it takes to mobilize and get out to our service territory. And then we asked what could we do to mitigate the times, and they said they appreciate it when we do the tree removal of the roads as well as doing our patrol before they get there. In some cases, we can actually do the isolation switching at Sappho if they're short an operator. We asked questions about the operator, what they go through, and BPA says that, in general, the local operator, as well as the one they call in from Shelton, can get that work done by the time the crew is here and ready to actually do the work, which unfortunately is 3.5-4 hours. Okay, let's see.
Don, that item about being able to access of the BPA radio system so our crews can communicate directly with them. Is that, you say, should have access. Has that been resolved? It sounds kind of obvious that those crews communicating with each other would really help.
Yeah, well, we've been able to success. I mean, we now have all the cell phone numbers of the responding crews. So unless we have a total phone outage, we have the ability to communicate by cell. There's also a way for our dispatcher to gain access to the satellite phone. Our satellite phone in BPA has satellite phones where we can coordinate a response. So communication with BPA, we experienced problems a couple of years ago, but no problems this most recent outage. We knew exactly what they were doing, and they kept us up to date.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we can switch form in certain circumstances. One thing I want to point out, when we actually do work on their lines, and the reason it would be a challenge, there are some OSHA and WAC requirements for information transfer that by the time BPA can successfully perform those mandatory functions, which requires a pretty much an in-person meeting or a remote meeting between the crews doing the work and the utility that is actually having the work done, that the amount of time it takes to do that information transfer and cover all the topics that are mandated will take at least 2 hours, maybe 3 hours even. When outside crews come to utility, you've seen videos where the host utility meets a bunch of crew members in bucket trucks in a parking lot, and they actually go through a list of topics that are mandatory to go over to convey the characteristics of the systems, abnormal conditions, and a lot of other information that's mandated by OSHA and WAC. So it'd be very much a challenge for the PUD crews to actually go out and put wire back up. So from a practical standpoint, unless BPA crews cannot gain access to our area due to broken bridges, we would not be actually doing the work on the 115 line other than patrolling and clearing logging roads. We have implemented a BPA mutual agreement since the updated agreement since our last meeting with BPA. So going back to our presentation.
That mutual aid, there's no charge for that from our standpoint, right?
No, there's no charge, and we don't invoice BPA for the work we do on their line. If we did, they would not have us do any work on the line or patrols.
Well, so, I was thinking the inverse might be that if we charged them something, it may improve their response time.
I would hope so, but I don't think so. We can send them a bill, but it will not get paid. It's not authorized for invoice. And the mutual aid agreement actually go over those details.
Yeah.
It's gratis. As a matter of fact, what they do for us is gratis. What we do for them is gratis. Okay, so
John, can I ask a question at this point? Or
sure.
Or you got more to say? Obviously, that looks like a great list of things you do to once we got an emergency. The obvious question is we need to ramp up efforts to get these trees cut back away from the line because it looks like that's the biggest part of the problem, if I understand the history right here.
Yeah, and Jim, I'm going to touch on that in just a very brief moment.
Okay.
Okay, so basically, these are the topics that we're going to talk about during our upcoming meeting that we hope to have in the next 2 or 3 weeks. Before the end of January, BPA is getting their people together who can be responsive to our requests. So we're going to update the outages since over a 3-year period since the last meeting. We want them to convey the general BPA right-of-way maintenance practices to PUD staff so we can get an understanding. Now, they are subject to NERC and NERC standards. And we have a pretty good idea what their right-of-way looks like. And actually, it's well-maintained. Unfortunately, their right-of-way is only 100 feet for the 115 line. It's not a very wide right-of-way. So We also want to talk about public messaging so that BPA can convey information to our mutual customers regarding their outages. We're also, our engineering department is interested in some operational limits on the BPA port answers and supply under certain abnormal conditions. A previous outage, I believe it was in October, required an extended period of time on the eastern part of the county to pick up some of our substations due to a loss of one of the 230 lines coming into Happy Valley, as well as an abnormal condition in our transmission, PUD transmission, that promoted and resulted in an additional 2 or 3 hours for some of our customers in Sequim. So we want to make sure we have a full understanding of what the restrictions are. And lastly, and I have it in red here because it's really the one thing I am most interested in talking about is where they do have issues is the potential remedy for trees outside the BPA right-of-way that have caused the majority of the outages. BPA has a 100-foot right-of-way. That's only 50 on either side of the line, I believe. And, of course, we have a lot of trees over 100 feet tall out west and everywhere else. So we won't, like we do with our tree trimming, and we do have the ability to identify danger trees on our system, even if they're outside the right-of-way, and we have some authority to remedy the tree exposure as long as we pay restitution, financial restitution, for the removal of the tree under narrow circumstances. Of course, every time you do that, you're subject to a lawsuit, but we've had success on our side doing that on our system, and we're going to try to actively encourage BPA to do likewise to reduce the possibility of these dead, dying, leaning trees outside the right-of-way that are clearly going to hit the line at some point in the next year. So that's what we're going to focus in on our upcoming meeting with BPA. Okay.
Is that meeting scheduled yet, John?
No, it is not. It should be scheduled in the next day or two.
Why don't you let me know about that? I might like to listen in.
Okay.
That paying restitution for trees outside the right-of-way, you know, we've run into this in the past where the owners of those trees have valued them very, very highly. Can we do some public relations thing to point out to people that, you know, that's important in keeping the lights on? So,
yes, and as a matter of fact, that is actually something Nicole has picked up, and we are doing on a regular basis. And actually, on another topic toward the end of the presentation here, some of our superintendents are very proactive in identifying problem areas as well. So, you know, they don't like these situations any more than our customers, so that we go the extra mile to identify these trees on our system. Okay, so January 5th afternoon, this gives you an idea of what wind speeds look like in the afternoon. This is actually after they died down a little bit. But,
John, we don't see your screen shared.
Okay, so we stopped sharing the screen?
At least I'm not seeing it.
I agree.
No, I'm not
either. I don't see it.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go back a slide here and move everyone out of the way. So I'm sorry, Jim, I was talking and you weren't saying this, but these are the topics that we're going to talk about when we meet BPA. And that includes danger trees outside the BPA right away that have caused the majority of the problems. This is what the winds look like the afternoon of the 5th. Most of our system problems happened in the Diamond Point area. Very little out west. I think the earlier storms this year had removed most of the trouble spots. But we did have a PUD outage between Blend and Diamond Point affecting almost 800 customers. We also had outages on Highway 112 west of Gossett, 136 customers. Hooker Road, 104 customers, Black Diamond, Mount Pleasant, and Mount Angeles, fewer than 100 each. And I'll be honest with you, from our perspective, this was not a significant weather event. It pales in comparison to some of our previous storms, not only going back years, but even over the last year. It was not a significant weather event from our facilities perspective. Okay, but we did have problems, and we wanted to highlight this. This is Delray off of Diamond Point. You see a line of thin trees started falling into the lines.
Now, this looks like, John, this looks like one of those areas where they've logged.
Yeah, exactly. Okay,
right, so right up to the power line and left trees there. And so.
Exactly, sir. So basically, recent logging that had been ongoing immediately before the outage left a narrow tree screen, and during 6 hours, five of these trees went into our line. And they were falling, and we actually could not do work for a number of hours until the wind died down enough and the tree stopped falling. Now, I do have some good news on this particular case. Our superintendent in SQUIM, Jason Seville, went and coordinated with the loggers, the property owner, and others. They're going to allow us to take care of that issue so that at least this problem for Diamond Point will not be ongoing. We're going to get rid of the screen. Aesthetically, it may not look as good, but at least we won't have power outages every time the wind blows. So that is the presentation giving an overview of the outage and plan response. Does anyone have any questions?
Well, you know, this has been a recurring problem over the years on the West End, the response time of Bonneville, and so on. It sounds like you're working this issue with Bonneville, and hopefully it'll improve, but I'll just tell this little story. I was, after this storm out where I am, I was going down 101, traffic was backed up, and there was a huge fur across Highway 101. So luckily I was able to switch over to Palo Alto to try to get home. And it was partially blocked by a big tree. So it's kind of a consequence of living on the peninsula, I think.
Yeah, but, Will, we do have a firm belief that we, if this is approached right and we can get BPA on board, we can take out many hundreds of trees outside the right-of-way between Silverado and Sappho. Fortunately, we're dealing with very few property owners out there, many of them Forest Service lands. So we're optimistic we might be able to get something accomplished, and we'll let you know after the meeting.
I think you can improve it, but it's never going to totally go away because we have cases where limbs will blow off of trees and go vertically with high winds into the power line. So
absolutely. I'm just trying to get back to where we were 5 and 10 years ago on BPA reliability.
Yeah. I'm talking while I'm muted. Any other comments or questions? Okay, I guess we're down to action items. T, have we captured any action items?
Yes, the one action item I do have is to revise the December 14th minute meeting to indicate that Commissioner Waddell did not approve the
committee. I couldn't hear Teresa.
Yeah, you're a bit muffled, T.
T, can you repeat that?
Yes, I have an action item to revise the December 14th meeting minutes.
Okay,
great.
In the case that Commissioner Waddell did not approve of the 2021 strategic plan.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, and T, this is John. I'd like to add that staff or Doug will advise the commissioners when we get a BPA meeting scheduled.
Okay.
And okay. I guess, John or whoever, let me know what the follow-up was on society, whether there's another meeting or whatever it is. I can stay posted. Stay informed on that, please. And be sure to let Rick know, too, what's going on there.
Okay. Next item on the agenda is comments from the public. Sean, do we have any?
I have a comment.
Okay. If anybody wants to make a comment, go ahead and give me your first name at this time. *6 to unmute.
Richard.
Christine.
Okay, I think Christine was first in line. So go ahead, Christine.
Going back to the two line items that were on the that were submitted for payment, and I think the payment was submitted on January the 5th. I looked, we didn't have a copy of that in our agenda item, so I didn't get to see the submitted bill, but I was a little bit surprised to see that because I'm pretty familiar with Northwest River Partners and their media campaigns, and Tlalum PUD is not listed as one of their members. So I went out to the website just now, and they are still not listed as one of their members, but 18 other PUDs are. So I was just curious. That's a curiosity to me. And then also, was it stated that we would be, that that wasn't an actual bill yet, that there would be some kind of an adjustment to that? It was hard to determine that from the conversation.
Let me clarify that for you, Will. That is an actual bill from Northwest River Partners, and we're not a member at the moment. Last year, Dave and Jim voted to not have Northwest River Partners as one of our members or become a member of them. So last year we were not, but they had sent a letter requesting us to become a member this year. And that's what was voted on earlier.
So is there actually an invoice that states what that $28,000 is for?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear your total.
Is there an invoice that actually states what that $28,000 is for that you're paying?
No, it's a letter that is broken down into dues, and then that second one, it's not an invoice at this point in time. They're just requesting that they become a member.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. But those items will be available for us to look at, right?
Yes, mm-hmm. They'll be part of the minutes of the meeting today.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, Richard, I think you're next.
Thank you, Will. So up on my TV screen, computer screen, I've got the 2021 strategic plan as approved. And sure enough, at the bottom, that part that Commissioner Pascal struck out is indeed gone. And it strikes me as rather alarming, given the discussions that we've heard today about batteries and solar and all those issues, that such a statement would be struck. And the other thing that is a bit disturbing is that, well, Will, you gave a little bit of rationale as to why you voted this down, this statement down. Commissioner Pascal gave no rationale whatsoever. So I would like now to ask Commissioner Pascal for the record to explain why he first struck this whole passage out and why he voted it down.
Well, I have to point out that, you know, we can take your comments, but we don't necessarily have to respond to them. So that's up to Rick. Rick, if you can, whatever you'd like to do.
I'm not sure what statement he's talking about.
Very interesting. The statement states, however, we also recognize the increasing cost of hydropower and changes in the energy sector and markets will require displacing the portion of power received from carbon sources with affordable and cost-effective renewable supply, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You struck that out. Why?
I didn't agree with it.
And that's your answer?
Yes, sir.
That's... Okay, good. Sean, do we have others?
I heard no others, Will. I think you're muted, Will.
What do they say? That's the new statement for 2020 and 2021. You're not muted. or you are muted. So anyway, if there's no other business to come before the commission, we stand adjourned. Thanks to everyone.